Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. So, my wife and I have a condominium in Bradenton, Florida, outside of Sarasota. And we've only had it for a little more than a year. Well, I believe it was the end of 2015. We were both there. And I think I left early. I just remember that my wife, Teresa, was there and I wasn't. And when we connected, she says, "Oh, I met our neighbors, people in the same court of the condominiums." She said, "I met this woman named Paula, and I really think that you would enjoy knowing her and her partner." "Okay, tell me more." She said, "Well, her wife is involved in this church." And she went on to explain a little bit. And I said, "That sounds like the Metropolitan Church." She said, "You may be right." And she started telling me other things about both Paula, whom she spoke to, and Nancy, who was not there at the time. Well, I was really motivated. So a little bit of texting, email, whatnot. We finally were able to connect during a short October trip and meeting Reverend Nancy Wilson, along with her wife, Paula, was really very, very enjoyable. And so I thought to myself, well, first of all, I was correct. The church organization that my wife was describing was, in fact, Metropolitan Community Churches. And I thought, well, you know something? The last time we did something on Metropolitan Community Churches was probably something like 15 years ago. And I think we need a little bit of an update. So in my conversations with Nancy, I asked her if she would mind coming on Common Threads, and she said not at all. So I'm very thrilled to have Nancy Wilson. Let me tell you a little bit about her. The Reverend Elder Dr. Nancy Wilson was elected to the position of moderator of the Metropolitan Community Churches in 2005. That might be something like Pope. I'm not sure. We'll find out. Following the retirement of the founder of MCC, the Reverend Elder Troy Perry. And in July of 2010, she was reelected for a term of 6 years. She is only the second person and the first woman to serve in that role since the founding of MCC in 1968. Reverend Wilson obtained degrees from Allegheny College, St. Cyril and Methodius Seminary, and the Episcopal Divinity School. She served as pastor of MCC in Sarasota, Florida, LA, Detroit, and Boston. In 2011, Barack Obama appointed Reverend Wilson to the President's Advisory Council on Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships. Following President Obama's reelection in 2013, Reverend Wilson gave a scripture reading at the inaugural prayer service at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C., and was the first openly gay clergy member to participate. In May of 2014, Reverend Wilson was one of four honorees to be recognized by Intersections International for her humanitarian work in the area of social justice. In honor of International Women's Day in 2014, HuffPost selected Reverend Wilson as one of 50 powerful religious leaders making change in the world. She's also one of the founders of Trinity Charities, a nonprofit located in Sarasota that provides support, education, and intervention for those infected and affected by HIV/AIDS and for those in temporary crisis. And she resides in Bradenton, Florida, and proud to say she is my neighbor. So welcome to Common Threads, Reverend Dr. Nancy Wilson. Hello, Nancy.
Hello, Fred. Thank you so much for welcoming me.
Certainly. This really is quite a resume and that you have, and you can imagine, especially once you knew who I was, you can imagine how excited I was to meet you.
Yes. Well, that's mutual.
Thank you. So let's start from this point that about 15 years ago, we had a local representative from Metropolitan Community Churches here in Grand Rapids to appear on Common Threads. And here's what I walked away with from that interview, as well as readings that I've done throughout the years prior and after this interview, that Metropolitan Community Churches was formed specifically to attract
people from the LGBT community. Not that it didn't welcome people who identify as straight, but that this was going to be the focus, to minister to those people who did not fit into the binary selections that are often afforded in society. And that you are decidedly, the denomination is decidedly Christian, and the person whom I interviewed was very clear that theologically it was a very conservative, I don't know if the word fundamentalist was used, again, this is 15 years ago, but it was a very conservative theological denomination. After speaking to you and also having conversations with other people, I find that that isn't necessarily the case. So I'd like you to start by giving a little bit of history of MCC, and not just organizationally, but theologically as well.
Yes, well, our church was founded in 1968, which, as you can imagine, thinking about LGBT people in those days, this was a time when most people were still in the closet, and there was serious condemnation from all sides, very, very little in the way of civil rights, and very little in the way of the civil rights movement. And Reverend Perry, who was from a Pentecostal background, really had to go through a deep change in himself to understand a spiritual transformation that really also included reexamining his fundamentalist background. Reverend Perry would never have said he was a fundamentalist, although there are people in MCC who come to MCC from all backgrounds, including fundamentalist backgrounds, who may still identify with some of the worship or even the theology. We're very open-ended theologically, but probably 40% of our members come from a Roman Catholic background, many from other evangelical backgrounds, some from no background. We say we have a combination of people who are the duns, meaning people who were part of churches but were rejected by churches, or the nuns, people who had no church affiliation, who maybe didn't feel welcome in any kind of Christian church. Now, MCC did identify as a Christian church, but always, Fred, with a view of respect and building relationships with those of other faiths. Very, very important to us. In the first Metropolitan Community Church that was founded by Troy Perry, the first synagogue met that reached out to LGBT people, Beth Chaim Chadashim in Los Angeles. And in many ways, they still consider him a founder of their synagogue, probably one of the few Christian ministers who could ever say that. And so Reverend Perry had to really go through examining a lot of the tenets of the faith he grew up in and really inviting people from very different backgrounds to be in leadership, to be in community. And oftentimes the local Metropolitan Community Church will be shaped a lot by the people who first founded that particular church. So it may have a more Pentecostal flavor, or may have a more may seem more like a United Church of Christ or more Catholic in its liturgy. Over time, we've sort of impacted each other enough that today, if you go into Metropolitan Community Church anywhere in the world, you'll recognize it.
And what is it that I would recognize that this was an MCC church?
I think several things. First of all, there'll be a very warm welcome among people who are there. There'll be an attention to good music and singing. People in our churches love to sing. There'll be a message that has a lot of passion, both about the Christian tradition and then understanding it through the lens of the experience, especially of LGBT people. So it'll feel very contemporary. And then we have communion every Sunday, which is more in the Catholic tradition in some sense, or the Disciples of Christ. And our communion is open. It's probably the most central tenet of MCC, that at a time when in many churches still in the world, you have to be a member of their church or meet certain kinds of criteria. But in MCC, if you just walk into church, you're welcome to celebrate or be part of communion. We offer prayers of blessings for people who don't want to have communion. So there's a kind of emphasis on inclusion and welcome that is there all the time and for all people. And I think those simple elements of a message that is passionate and relevant, and communion that's open to all, you would recognize, and many variations in different cultures and countries of that. But I've worshipped in MCC churches in probably at least 30 countries, and you see that same spirit, I think.
You may see the same spirit, but am I understanding that you might get a different theological message from one church to another?
You'll have variety. Yeah, we say we're sort of a big umbrella. And if you're in MCC for a long time, you really can't insist that everyone see things exactly your way. You may have a strong point of view, but you know you're in fellowship and community with people who may have a different point of view. Or the person you talked to 15 years ago, who I believe I know that person, wouldn't be the same, have the same theology she had 15 years ago. And she would say that because I know her. And so all of us are on a journey theologically.
And so there is no dogma. There is no prescription for belief.
We have a new statement of faith. We had a more like a dogmatic statement probably 40 years ago or so, but none of us were ever very happy with it. We felt like it was a statement that was more for other people than for ourselves. And we have just agreed on a new and very open statement of faith that really is more like a prayer. And it's about our spiritual values, and it's not dogmatic per se. It doesn't look like an old creed or something like that. But it does say that we treasure and value the Christian tradition and creeds and scripture, and that we hold that as very sacred and important to us. But we also take, the experience that we've had in the last almost 50 years, and that has authority and authenticity for us. And that we are very open to understanding what it means to be people of faith in our world today.
Tell us a little bit, Nancy, about your personal journey. You came from I believe was it a Methodist home?
I
did. And yeah. So how did you get from right. there to here?
Yes, you know, my mother's family had been Quaker. They're settled Long Island. And so that was her background initially. I think she was baptized in a Presbyterian church, different reasons. My dad was from a very conservative Baptist background, which he was never really at peace with. And so the nearest church on Long Island where I grew up was a Methodist church, the nearest Protestant church. And so we went there because it was close. And as people were branching out and moving out to Long Island. And so I grew up in the United Methodist Church. And the church, the Methodist Church of the 50s and 60s and early 70s was very social justice oriented in many ways. Sadly, I feel like it's retreated from a lot of that in the last 20, 25 years. But it gave me a foundation. I think I really fell in love with preaching. We had a wonderful preacher, and I knew from an early age that I wanted to preach and probably be a pastor, which in the 50s, 60s, women weren't really doing that, not in any significant numbers, and weren't being really welcomed into seminary. So I grew up with that desire to be clergy, and also I really didn't understand much about sexuality in the 50s and 60s, you know, very little information, especially if you didn't fit the norm in any way. So when I went to college, I eventually came out as a lesbian at the same time that I was applying to seminary in Boston. And it felt like I was on a collision course then between my sexuality and who I was with my vocational real desire. And, you know, I don't think I ever thought I would necessarily be a Methodist pastor or anything conventional. But I had no idea that by the time I went to seminary in 1972 in Boston, that metropolitan community churches had already started, had a few churches in this country. And finally, they were starting one in Boston the very week I moved there to go to seminary. And I heard about it on a radio show. Tip our hats to radio shows. They're very important. And so I heard about MCC on this radio show and joined a new church that was starting and was invited because I was in my first few weeks of seminary to really help pastor and begin that church at age 22. And so I jumped right into MCC, left the Methodist church, and, you know, as you do when you're young and you just and do that. And I've never regretted it. And I believe I had, there were gifts from the Methodist Church that I learned. But I really always was attracted to a more ecumenical, a wider vision of community of faith. And so MCC afforded me that and afforded me the chance to really be part of a great movement for justice.
In looking over your biography, and by the way, let me, before I even ask that question, remind people that they are listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. My name is Fred Stella, and with me today is Reverend Dr. Nancy Wilson of the Metropolitan Community Churches. What I was going to say is, in looking over your resume and your education, you got your MDiv from St. Cyril and Methodius Seminary. Now yes. That sounds Orthodox. What is St. Cyril
and Methodius? It's a Roman Catholic seminary.
Ah, okay.
That was founded for the Polish community that settled in the Detroit area. And so they trained immigrant Polish-speaking priests, and also priests from Poland eventually went and studied there. In fact, Pope John Paul II taught there before he was made, when he was the Bishop of Krakow. And so it was an ethnic seminary, and it just so happened that Anthony Kosnick, who was the dean when I was there in the early 80s, late 70s, Anthony Kosnick, who was the head of the Catholic Theological Society of America, wrote a book on human sexuality. Eventually, he was silenced for his views on human sexuality. But before he was silenced, he admitted me to the school to finish my Master of Divinity degree, which I started in Boston and then ended up finishing at St. Cyril and Methodius. And they had wonderful teachers there, and they were very actually interesting community. This is 35 years ago. They were a wonderful community to be part of, and Roman Catholic through and through.
That's funny, because I'm from Detroit, and I'm trying to remember that. Any
it's
idea?
It's in Orchard Lake. It's part of St. Mary's.
Okay, yeah,
Saint
sure.
Mary's School.
Sure.
Yeah.
If you told me St. Mary's, I would have known. Okay.
Right. Well, they're the little seminary that's attached to St. Mary's, not the diocesan seminary. So it's... And like I said, they had a very eclectic group of people studying there, including at that time nuns who were hoping one day to be ordained as priests, which still hasn't happened, but they were prepared for that.
As a matter of fact, I remember speaking to someone who went to that seminary, St. Mary's, and he said that there were a lot of people exploring their sexuality at that institution.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, as I said, you know, yes, I think that Catholic Church always has many layers of of its lived reality and its hierarchy and dogma. But I found the people, the parish priests who taught there and the many nuns who taught there were incredible. They were great, really gifted spiritual people and very welcoming in their own way. And as long as they didn't come to the attention of the hierarchy, everything was fine.
I hear that a lot.
Yeah. Yes. That's right. Yep.
And you were quite open about your sexuality at that time at that place?
Yes, because I was pastoring MCC Detroit, and I was a public person and figure. I was in the newspapers all the time about issues that were coming to the fore in the 70s, late 70s. Yeah. So, yes, and they treated me with a lot of respect and compassion and, you know, just totally non-judgmentally. I never had a single problem or issue with anyone, and I deeply appreciated their hospitality. And the courses were terrific. They were great. So
wonderful. What about in your role as pastor? And you have pastored in several cities, including
yes.
Detroit. What about any negative experiences? And I'll give you a couple of for instances that you might be able to address. First of all, acceptance in ecumenical, not interfaith, but ecumenical organizations or efforts in any of those cities. And second of all, any hate crimes or simply intimidation?
Right. Well, in Detroit, this was the 70s, and there were hate crimes. You know, I had members who were murdered, leaving a gay bar. These kind of things happened, and we didn't even use the word hate crimes then, just to think about it. And one of the most touching things, I think, was when a young man who was murdered, leaving a gay bar, and he was murdered. And the most important thing for his friends and the police was to remove all any gay literature or signs of him being gay from his apartment so his parents wouldn't know that he was gay. That was more important than even finding his killers, you know. So because it was all the shame associated with being gay, that this was going to be, you know, more difficult than to his parents than knowing he had been murdered, which was, when I think about that now, today, it's hugely painful. And there was a lot of that kind of violence and things that went on and was never reported but reported all the time. In Detroit, I was never welcomed into any ecumenical circles. That didn't exist at that time. When I moved to Los Angeles, there, a much larger setting, there were more other colleagues and friends, and eventually we formed an LGBT ecumenical group of our own. Actually, that became an interfaith group. And there were a Southern California Ecumenical Council, I think, and others that did welcome MCC. And on a regional and state level around the U.S., there's been some openness in some places. In other places, MCC's never quite been welcomed fully into those circles or circumstances. During AIDS, the worst of AIDS years, we worked in coalitions a lot ecumenically, and I think that necessity sort of made that happen more than anything else. But those were always that ecumenical acceptance. Interfaith acceptance, I would say, also had its own challenges, but also has been very fruitful, very, very good. I'd say in the last, 15 or 20 years especially.
Would you say that's because, with all of its flaws, with all of the issues that it has had, that American Christianity has matured to a level where there is more acceptance than, say, some of the religions that come out of other countries, that you're dealing with first-generation Americans,
yeah,
and they're not ready to put their seal of approval on it?
I think that's true. I think the complexity globally is often around the colonial issues and impacts, and the was a part of colonialism, and so often has left the colonial version of Christianity in places that, where in the West, in some ways, other forces have moved things on. Some of those deep values, especially issues around sexuality, I think are tougher to work through. In the U.S., I would say there's been more conversation. I think HIV and AIDS, in many ways, as devastating and awful as it was and stigmatizing as it was, on the other hand, it did reveal a great deal. And so many, many people who didn't think they knew a gay person or all of that began to open up. I think the marriage equality struggle made that more real to many people. And I think just the old-fashioned idea of coming out, the more LGBT people who come out to their neighbors, families, friends, the more people who know LGBT people, the less of a mystery or a stigma or that this is for people. And so I think that's true in churches, even churches that may have a policy that's negative. In many local churches, they really resist that and they're welcoming. And I think that's really important. It's happening in evangelical churches today. I think it's one of the big stories that's happening there that often isn't being talked about, that there are many evangelical churches are on the edge of struggling with this in new ways, because generationally, young adults and young people, millennials, are really over this issue. This is, for them, this is a settled issue, that inclusion is really the right thing.
Yeah, that is certainly very obvious, and that the religions and denominations, at least here in the United States, that are still in that 50s, 60s mentality, they're just going to dry up for the most part.
Yes.
Still today, do you have members, do you see members in the various churches of your denomination that are remain closeted?
Yes. I think mostly it's either older people or sometimes people in more rural areas. You know, I think sometimes in the Deep South and in parts of the Midwest and places, there are people who are still closeted, maybe even if they don't have to be. It becomes a habit sometimes that people have, or internalized issues that they haven't worked through. But also there are, in many communities, there is not a sense of welcome. We have a church in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and they're on the front lines of some very, a lot of issues. And, you know, they have a sign that says faith, not hate, because that's the stark dichotomy that they face, that so much of religion is lined up in a hateful way against their community. And so in Hattiesburg, it's a different fight than it is for us, say, in Washington, D.C., or in parts maybe of Florida or urban areas in the U.S.
Nancy, we are down to the wire for this week. We have to run. However, before we leave, website information, if people are interested in hearing or learning more about Metropolitan Community Churches.
Right. It's www.mccchurch.org. That's our MCC website globally. And we also have a church in Grand Rapids, Reconciliation Metropolitan Community Church. They're on Facebook, and they meet Sundays at 10 a.m. And you can find them on their website or on the MCC website as well. We have a Find an MCC Church portion of the website. So.
Wonderful. Well, Nancy, we've got more questions, so we're going to ask you to join us again next week. And we'll have more conversation. You've been listening to Common Thread.
Certainly.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella. Reverend Dr. Nancy Wilson from Metropolitan Community Churches has been our guest, and we will pick this up next week. Please join us then here on WGVU.